Welcome to your go-to source for entertainment.
Wait for it.
Gaming.
Wait for it.
Anime.
Plus Ultra!
Mr. Eric Almighty and Phil the Filipino?
Yeah,
they've got you covered. And all you gotta do is wait for it. This is the Wait For It Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Wait For It Podcast. I am your co-host Phil Smith, aka Phil the Filipino. And welcome to a brand new edition of Filuminati Fan Theories. Thank you guys so much for all the support and the feedback from this series. It seems to get a lot of interaction on social media, which I will address here in just a moment. If you're brand new to the podcast and you've never heard an episode of Filuminati, it's where I will take a look at some of the most popular conspiracy or fan theories out there in regards to some of our favorite things, you know, video games, movies, television shows, just like that. I used to do conspiracy theories such as like, you know, the Titanic sinking theory, celebrity doppelgangers, stuff like that. But I decided to switch over to fan theories because they're just a lot more fun. And honestly, there are enough conspiracy theorists out there. I don't need to add to that pot or stir that pot, I guess I should say. One thing I do want to mention before I get this started is these are fan theories from Reddit or other sources of the internet. These are not mine. I did not come up with these. I typically will pick a topic and look into theories for that specific topic for that month. And this month I landed on Batman. I bring this up because people really became like whiny little turds on social media about the last video we posted. It was the one about Simba. And this is why Eric handles all of the social media interactions for the podcast, because I'm not allowed to respond to anybody because I'm too confrontational, because I will just straight up call you a moron, whereas Eric will handle it diplomatically and with a level head. I don't do that very well. So just so you know, if you do find yourself here, if you came here because you saw a clip on Facebook, on Instagram or TikTok, these are not my theories, but also I'm allowed to give my opinion on whether or not on their validity or whatever it is. It's just for fun. And if you don't like that, shut the hell up. I don't know what else to tell you. I just had to get that out of the way and address it, because some of the feedback just really irritated the hell out of me. And I know it's not supposed to, but like Eric tells me all the time, we're in a public space. I just have to learn to deal with it. But it also clashes with my want and need to just call some of you morons. And I won't do that. Eric will, again, respond in a diplomatically appropriate way. That's much better than what I would do. So let's go ahead and get into this episode. Actually, really quick, before we do, I want to welcome in any of you brand new listeners and returning listeners to the Wait For It Podcast. I did have a little bit of an emergency this past weekend, so Monday's episode of Netflix and Phil is postponed, but it will come out on Friday instead of this past Monday. So if you are looking for that episode, it will be out here in a couple of days. But I'm excited to get into this episode and talk about one of our favorite characters here on the podcast, which is Batman. And, you know, as far as like the animated space and the live action space, Batman has always really been one of our favorites. So I'm excited to get into these with you here today. And again, if you're brand new, stick around to the very end. I'll let you know where you can find all of our links to the rest of our content, as well as our social media. But let's get right into these here. I'm going to start off with a really quick one. And this one was posted a couple years ago on Reddit by user DVDHound79. And it states that Batman has another rule. He has a couple of rules that we all know of, you know, from the modern comic book iteration: no guns and no killing. And then they state, but I've noticed in the animated series and the Rocksteady game series, he also does not call the villain by their villainous moniker. I believe this is a way to connect with any possible humanity left in his opponents. He calls Penguin Cobblepot, Two-Face Harvey or Dent, Ivy is Dr. Isley or Pamela. He only calls Joker the Joker because that's the only identity he has. Ultimately, I feel like Batman has an almost unshakable hope. Hope that someday all these quote-unquote villains can be rehabilitated, which is why he wants to trust in the system. Some of the comments also mention he does this in the comics as well, exceptions being some of the female villains, such as Ivy or Quinn. Another person in the comments also states that they think that it's also due to the fact that Batman is keenly aware of the symbolic and psychological power that goes with a costumed identity. In his origin story, he always points out that adopting the Batman identity and costume is used to create fear, And he knows that his rogues gallery does the same thing, hence why he makes a point to always humanize them. It shows not only his hope for them, but also that he is not afraid of them, and he tries to put them off balance by drawing them back to their human side. There's also a great example of a villain who does this to Batman, Ra's al Ghul. He always calls Batman detective as a means to remind Batman that Ra's is not intimidated by his whole shtick. I've been coming across a lot of reels and TikToks concerning not only Batman, but also like The Flash, as far as really caring about their villains. You know, they talk about the humanity that still is living inside of these characters. And it is something that I have seen in the animated and the video games, as this user has pointed out. And, you know, it just kind of points to, again, Bruce just trying to speak to and draw out any last bit of humanity that may be within these characters. I like this theory a lot. Let's move to the next one here. And this one is actually in regards to The Dark Knight. We have a couple here for The Dark Knight, actually. And this one is from Reddit user Toonie Sandwich. And it says, Coleman Reese didn't realize Bruce Wayne was Batman until his conversation with Lucius Fox. I know I'm putting out a fan theory on a 13-year-old movie, so go ahead and reacquaint yourself with this scene where Coleman Reese, an accountant at Wayne Enterprises, blackmails Lucius Fox, Batman's confidant and main man at Wayne Enterprises. He demands $10 million per year for life to buy his silence. The question relevant to this fan theory is, his silence on what? Based on Lucius's response to his demands, it sounds like Reese is accusing Bruce Wayne of being Batman, but Reese never actually says that. What he does say is that there are discrepancies in the R&D budget and that Wayne Enterprises designed the Batmobile. From those pieces of information, it does not logically follow that the owner of Wayne Enterprises, who is notoriously hands-off in his handling of the company, is Batman. If Reese does have evidence of Batman's identity, he never indicates as such. It's Lucius who brings it up first. I believe that Reese had no idea who Batman was before walking into that meeting. He wasn't blackmailing Bruce Wayne. He was blackmailing Wayne Enterprises. He was accusing Wayne Enterprises of aiding and abetting Batman and threatening them with a PR nightmare. So what happens after he lays out his evidence and demands? Lucius essentially calls the bluff, but in the process, tactically admits that Bruce Wayne is Batman. What if that was a mistake? What if he played his cards too loosely and revealed information that Reese didn't already have? As Lucius talks, Reese gets visibly uncomfortable and shaken, and eventually he backs down. One explanation is that he hadn't thought his plan through, but another, and I believe more likely, is that his plan was to go up against Wayne Enterprises and threaten to expose wrongdoing, not go up against Batman himself. When he realized that's exactly what he was doing, he lost his nerve and left. It was only later, when the Joker starts killing people and demanding that Batman turn himself in, that Reese threatens to expose his identity. In the comments, a user states, yeah, this actually makes a lot of sense. Wayne Enterprises making a ton of Batman tech doesn't necessarily mean Wayne is Batman. And given Bruce's general public persona, I doubt Reese would automatically assume he's Batman. Plus, if he did assume Wayne was Batman, why would he not have thought through everything that Fox tells him about blackmailing Batman? Reese likely had no idea the gravity of his discovery before that moment and balked. I think this one has a decent amount of validity to it. Reese seems like, I mean, obviously he's a smart guy to be working at Wayne Enterprises to begin with. It's not like he's an idiot. But reaching the conclusion that Wayne Enterprises is instead working with Batman as opposed to Bruce Wayne being Batman, I think is a little bit less of a stretch. Hence why he is blackmailing the company itself, not necessarily Bruce Wayne. And yeah, it kind of seems like maybe Lucius let the cat out of the bag here, but I don't know. What do you guys think? Let's head back to the Justice League cartoon, and this one was posted by Reddit user Drop the Bass, and it states the real reason Batman won't date Wonder Woman. Now this theory, and I link all the theories from Reddit in the show notes, so there used to be a clip in this one, but it has since been removed from YouTube. And essentially in the clip, you know, Batman states that, you know, Wonder Woman is a colleague, she is a trusted friend, you know, all those kind of things. But this user feels like he left out the biggest reason because he was cut off. Batman is paranoid. He has plans to take down the JLA and even set up the League as a way to take him down if he ever went rogue. He uses logic and sticks to the facts over wants and desires 9 times out of 10. Paranoia keeps him from being with Diana. Imagine Bruce Wayne. Photographic memory, iron will, incredible genetics, genius level intellect, one of the greatest forensic minds in the universe, incredible funding and resources, gets with Diana. Deadly warrior woman, incredible strength, magical weaponry, skills in leadership and problem solving, equally powerful will and slight inclination towards violence due to her upbringing. The child would arguably be the most powerful and dangerous individual in the world equal to only the child of a Kryptonian and most likely far more intelligent and violent. The natural heir to the world of Amazons and possibly the most sought after to lead the League of Assassins. If this child were led astray by, say, an enemy or just overly protective parents who didn't have very good parents or stable upbringings themselves, you have the biggest threat anyone had ever heard of. In conclusion, Bruce plus Diane, hyper-intelligent, highly skilled, superpowered heir of two powerful armies slash empires that could possibly be less than stable as either a hero or a villain, the possibility of birthing the greatest villain in all of history of the multiverse would absolutely cause Bruce to keep his little Wayne under wraps and deny himself a happy life with the woman he respects. Shout out to this user for referring to Bruce's member as Lil Wayne. I really appreciate that, as did other people. A lot of people in the comments pointing out that Diana is essentially Superman without any natural weaknesses like kryptonite. And Bruce's contingency plan for her was certainly the weakest and unreliable simply because she's so powerful. So again, we've seen Batman be very cautious. Obviously, he has he's thinking 10 steps ahead. And, you know, maybe this is one of the reasons to not only protect himself from an emotional standpoint, but also just protect the entire world. And let's get into the last one here. This one is also from The Dark Knight and it's posted about 7 years ago. And this one is actually about the Joker. Again, one of our favorite characters here in the podcast and a lot of people's favorites. This one was posted by Reddit user General Z, and it states that the Joker is the hero in The Dark Knight. Joker, although a lying psychopath, is actually the hero in The Dark Knight. Before the Joker, Gotham was a mess. Entire sections of the city were closed off due to madness, organized crime ran rampant, and the majority of important city officials were wildly corrupt. The city even tolerated a renegade vigilante who ran around wearing a rubber suit. Okay, with special armor and carbon fiber, but they don't know that. Along comes the Joker, and by the end of a very short time, almost all organized crime was eliminated. Many corrupt officials were imprisoned or dead, and the city's vigilante even went into hiding for 8 years. This was all part of Joker's masterfully executed plan. Everyone must realize that Joker, despite his claim otherwise, really was, quote, the man with a plan, throughout the entire film. The first thing we see Joker do is rob a mafia-controlled bank, eliminating the entire team of expert bank robbers who helped them pull it off. Of course, the robbery wasn't about the money, it was about luring Lau out of hiding, preferably with all the major crime family's collective money. That works beautifully, and as Joker predicts, Batman goes to Hong Kong to extradite Lau. Now Lau is in a safe place, which Joker can, amazingly, access with ease. This, of course, is all just part of the plot of the film, but Joker is playing it amazingly, murdering key criminals and corrupt officials that could help insulate those at the top. Dent actually argues for insulating the men on the top in the interest of cleaning the streets of lower-level goons, but Joker knows that won't work in the long term. At this point, we honestly just have three men battling for Gotham's soul, as Joker puts it, but Dent and Wayne are simply playing into the Joker's greater plan. This even extends to Joker's threats to destroy a hospital. With Batman and Gordon's help, Joker helps them root out corrupt police officials. Dent even kills some of those officials later in the film. Gordon's promotion, too, did a major service to Gotham. I think a lot of people take the Joker's clapping during Gordon's promotion scene to be sarcastic, but I actually think that Joker believed in Gordon, one of the few officers on the force who was truly incorruptible. So now the Joker has a pretty clear path to getting rid of the organized crime problem and corrupt officials problem, but the vigilante problem remains. As we saw at the beginning of the film, Batman was inspiring other vigilantes, and a society cannot stand when each man takes his own justice. This symbol of fear and unbridled vengeance, as Joker sees it, needs to be stopped, but not killed. If he were killed, he would just be a martyr, and his symbol would live on. Of course, since Dent was a far better symbol for the city, he would make a far better martyr. I don't know if Joker actually intended for Harvey to be so physically scarred by the explosion from which Batman saved him, but I am certain that he wanted Harvey to feel the full pain of Rachel's death, which is why he purposely tells Batman to go to the wrong address. He knows what Rachel's death would do to Harvey psychologically, and that Batman would eventually have no choice but to kill Harvey. This breaks Batman psychologically and also makes him a villain, a true villain, the kind that abandons his own principles. Batman now has no choice but to disappear, leaving his memory to fade into something of an urban legend by the time of The Dark Knight Rises. When we pick up the next film, we see a defeated Bruce Wayne who had retired 8 years prior. The city was safe and peaceful until Bane shows up and doesn't need constant vigilante justice to keep it safe. Joker shows Batman the error of his ways, but does so in a totally devastating way. Even the display with the two boats at the film's climax only served to prove to the people of Gotham that they wouldn't turn on each other. He proves that there was good even in the most supposedly despicable of Gotham's inmates. In the end, Gotham is actually clean. It wasn't because of Harvey, who died too soon to do any good, except as a martyr. And it wasn't because of Batman, who was ostracized and treated like the criminal such a vigilante truly is for 8 years. Gotham was safe because the Joker had cleaned up the streets, he eliminated corrupt police, he destroyed organized crime financially, he uplifted Gotham's spirit, and he even got rid of the flying pest that had been corrupting Gotham ever since he declared himself its protector. Getting to some comments here, one person stated, which in turn could have given some credence to the story of the mob being the cause of his scars and initial driving point. He does sort of admit his whole goal is to make Batman see you can accomplish more by fighting fire with fire than water. A controlled burn stops the constant crime inferno continually destroying the city. Now, I do want to point out some things that other people are pointing out on here and something I didn't necessarily mention. He did blow up Rachel. So there is that. Rachel is very, very dead. Also, when he burns the money, I believe Lao is at the top of that money pit, which is pretty non-hero like. So while I don't think this one is necessarily perfect, I think it's a solid theory, and I think it's a lot of fun. I mean, obviously, I'm going to have a propensity to kind of root for the Joker more than other people, and I think this one's pretty solid. What do you guys think? But that's it, folks, for this month's episode of Filuminati Fan Theories. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoy researching these and reading them out for you. Again, if you're brand new to the podcast or if you just need a reminder, make sure you check out the show notes to find our link tree. You'll find all of our social media as well as all of our other episodes. And again, don't forget, if you are in the Ocala area this weekend, make sure to find Eric and I and the entire Wait For It team at Brick City Anime Festival this weekend. We are so excited to see you guys there. Plenty of awesome vendors and panels that Eric and I will be hosting. And yeah, it's just going to be a lot of fun. Another reminder, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, leave us a 5-star review. It is one of the best ways you can support the show. And if you want to go that extra mile of supporting the show, we do have our Patreon page that is now live, so make sure you check that out as well. Folks, I'm your host, Phil Smith, aka Phil the Filipino. Thank you again for listening to another episode of Filuminati Fan Theories. Do not forget, we release new episodes every Monday and Wednesday, and all you got to do is wait for it.
So, I heard you're looking for a go-to source for entertainment.
Wait for it.
Gaming?
Wait for it.
Anime?
Plus Ultra!
Mr. Eric Almighty and Phil the Filipino?
Yeah,
they've got you covered. And all you gotta do is wait for it. This is the Wait For It Podcast.